Your father was killed on the 27th of February, 2015, in front of the Kremlin, gunned down there. It must have been a terrible moment for you, and probably still is.
It was the most dramatic moment in my life. I think it was, and it is still, it's a big tragedy for myself. And at the same time, it was a decisive moment.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Backstory. I'm Dana Lewis. On this edition, we talk to a young lady whose father was one of the leading opposition figures in Russia, and for speaking up and speaking out in Putin's Russia, it cost him his life. Also, the former prime minister, who later tried to run for president and unseat Putin, he speaks on the recent demonstrations across the country, corruption, and the jailing of opposition figure Alexei Navalny. And an expert view on what happens now. All right, Jana Nemtsov joins us now from Nizhny Novgorod. Jana, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you. And you?
Very well. I mean, your father was killed on the 27th of February, 2015, in front of the Kremlin, gunned down there. It must have been a terrible moment for you, and probably still is.
It was the most dramatic moment in my life. So you wanna talk about my feelings, what I felt when I learned that my father had been assassinated?
Yes.
I think it was, and it is still, it's a big tragedy for myself. And at the same time, it was a decisive moment. Back then, there was one question. Should I keep silent or should I act? And back then, it was a moral choice for me. And I understood perfectly well those risks which are normally associated with being outspoken in Russia. And so I thought for probably 1 or 2 days and realized that I would speak out, otherwise it would be a betrayal of my father. And that's why I played an active role in the whole investigation. Of course, it was pretty clear for me that no proper investigation would be conducted. But I did what I could to push it forward. So we initiated and we employed some mechanisms of international oversight of this investigation, and the Parliamentary Assembly of the Council of Europe approved of a resolution. Mm-hmm. And it basically outlined those drawbacks which there were in the whole investigation.
So the chief drawback would be if the state doesn't want to cooperate and they're not sincere in finding the killers, they're not going to be found.
They are not sincere. They can do that. I think it's not a complicated case for them, but they don't want to identify masterminds. Or, of course, they don't want to identify the motive behind the investigation. And these two questions still remain unanswered. So we had the same procedure at the OSCE. So we have the official position of two important international organizations regarding this investigation. But I still believe that the truth will come out, but I understand that it is almost impossible that we will get the truth under the current political leadership in Russia.
Who killed your dad, do you think?
You want me to say that this killing was authorized or directly ordered by Vladimir Putin? I don't know, because we know very little about all the circumstances of this murder, of this brutal murder. We know some people who were directly involved, and they were, by the way, identified, but they have never been punished.
These are the guys who pulled the trigger.
I mean, we have to basically, not we, but the Central Investigative Committee has to interrogate Ramzan Kadyrov, who I believe was directly involved in my father's assassination. And it was my request. I filed these requests on a number of occasions, but of course, the Central Investigative Committee does not do its job properly, and they are doing it intentionally, because effectively, their top Russian officials blocked this investigation. And it is itself a crime to block criminal investigations. And at least, and I said it 6 years ago, and I would like to repeat it right now, that Vladimir Putin bears political responsibility for my father's murder.
I knew your dad, and I liked him a lot. As a journalist for NBC, I was based there originally in 1998 when the financial crash happened. And he was one of the first people I interviewed, and he talked about how he was removed as deputy prime minister because he wanted to close all the banks down, all these corrupt dozens and dozens of banks. And they were trying to clean up the system. And in the end, Yeltsin buckled under the pressure probably of oligarchs. And but then I followed your father also in Sochi when he ran for mayor, and asked him why look, he was a governor of Nizhny Novgorod region, and then he was deputy prime minister, and then suddenly he's running for mayor in Sochi, and the question was why. And obviously we knew the Olympics were going to go there, but following him around in Sochi, and Garry Kasparov was there, and he just said, look, we have to start somewhere again to build a bridge of democracy, of free media, and then return Russia to back to development again instead of this stillborn dictatorship. And he was deeply inspired to do that. So it's a terrible loss for Russia, because if he had stayed as a big political player in Russia, don't you think it would be a very different country today?
So first of all, I would like to follow up on your most recent remarks and just add to it that my father also participated in the regional elections in the city of Yaroslavl. And in 2013, he won the elections. He got elected to the regional parliament of the province of Yaroslavl, and he worked there quite effectively, I should say. Yes, and I think that he was not an arrogant person, and he wanted to do something on any level, and he was effective, and he had a lot of experience in government, governing, for example, the region of Nizhny Novgorod. Mm-hmm. So it's difficult. I would say yes. If my father had been elected president in 2000, we would have lived in a totally different country.
What was the point of? And by the way, many people thought that Boris Yeltsin was grooming him to take over, and that he would be president one day. And so it was this great opportunity missed by, I think, a lot of people think. But what was the point of silencing him with an assassination? Because he had been critical of the administration and Putin and the Kremlin for many years. What was the point of it?
We can make guesses, but we cannot be so sure of our guesses. So you know that Russia is a repressive state. It's governed by an autocrat, and of course, all leaders of the Russian opposition are under threat and under attack. They can be killed, they can be thrown into prison, they can be poisoned. So it was the case with Alexei Navalny. He was poisoned with Novichok, a nerve agent, but he managed to survive and was a miracle. So it is how all autocratic states behave. There is nothing new about it. They're afraid of losing power. And the ultimate goal for any autocrats, and Putin is by no way an exception, is to retain power, presumably for life. So, and of course, they are afraid of any people who oppose, who are critical of the government. Why they chose my father as a target? That I don't know. I want to get an answer to this question. It's an important question. But he was a powerful voice. He was an experienced politician.
He was a powerful voice for sure. And I completely agree with you, Jeanne. And some people say maybe because that's when the invasion of Ukraine was taking place in the Crimea and he had certain facts on what was taking
place. No, I would say a different thing regarding what you've just said about Ukraine. Yes, he was working on an investigative report about Russia's involvement, military actually involvement into Ukraine.
Yes.
But you have to bear in mind the political situation in 2014 and 2015. It was very different from what is happening now, because Putin has lost a lot of his legitimacy since 2015. So now, back then, the level of support of Putin was really high. It was literally 87%. So, and he, of course, in this environment, it was way easier to attack opposition politicians. And I also think that probably Putin had something personal with my father, because my father, I would put it this way, made really impolite remarks in regard to Putin. And probably he was really offended with his remarks. I think that he takes a lot of things really personally.
If I can ask you then, are there parallels with Alexei Navalny? Because Navalny's video of corruption in the Kremlin and Putin's wallets, where he talks and names names about people who have kept money in shadowy offshore companies for Vladimir Putin, this billion-dollar palace. I mean, he has called him a thief and basically called him a mafia leader. It is very personal.
I would add to that. He calls him a very old man. And that is really personal. I cannot translate it into English directly, but he refers to him as bunkerny dед. I have to, if you can translate it, please do that. So I think that he regards Navalny as his enemy number one, and of course it's because of Navalny's investigations into grand corruption in Russia. And of course, because of his personal attacks that target mainly Putin. Yes, I absolutely agree. And also Navalny, he is a very powerful politician. He has a network of offices all across Russia. And his infrastructure is extremely efficient. So he managed to bring together active people, very capable of working and very passionate about bringing change to Russia. Of course, all these factors contributed to what had happened to Alexei Navalny. I mean, his attempted poisoning.
Do you fear for his safety in prison now? Because they tried to poison him in August. He has since come out with this videotape embarrassing the Kremlin and Putin and all of the people around Putin, including the Federal Security Service, all sorts of people in government. What's going to happen to him?
Oh, I would refrain from making predictions. I'm extremely worried. I think that there are real threats for him. And that was the reason why I joined the protests in Nizhny Novgorod. I think our active engagement can save his life. And I am not an exception. I am a citizen of my country. I don't want my country to be an unlawful state. I want my country to be a democratic state, and I want our rights as citizens to be observed by the authorities. And of course, I feel very personal about Alexei, whom I regard as my friend. So we were in touch before his detention. So we met on a number of occasions. And I truly believe that I would like him to be our next president.
What do you think is going to happen with these demonstrations? They are calling for more of them. Do you think that and how is the Kremlin going to deal with it?
Oh, I am not Peskov, who is Putin's spokesman, so you have to ask him about their plans. So my plan is to join demonstrations on the 31st of January in support of Alexei Navalny and in support of the idea that we should get rid of our autocratic regime and we should bring change, bring democratic change to our country. So I know only one thing as we are talking right now. This news came, I think, 1 hour, 2 hours ago. So Alexei Navalny is now under arrest till the 15th of February. So the hearing regarding his suspended sentence is scheduled for the 2nd of February. But also there are going to be another hearing on the 28th of January. So they are going to consider whether his current arrest is in accordance with our laws. And so I think that it is a reaction to a massive protest that we had last Saturday. So I think that's a sign that the authorities are afraid of big crowds and they cannot ignore our views, our opinions, and the fact that thousands of people took to the streets, not only in Moscow and St. Petersburg, but in Nizhny Novgorod, the biggest demonstration in the history of our city, and everywhere, in big cities, in small cities, everywhere. I think we are witnessing now a formation of a nationwide movement. It is what we didn't have several years ago. Now it might evolve into, yes, a nationwide movement against the current political regime.
If your father was alive today, what would he be saying, do you think?
What would he be saying?
These demonstrations about Navalny. They knew each other.
Of course. Of course. They worked with each other. My father was very supportive of Alexei Navalny. Or he would have joined protests. For sure. I think that he would have been really outspoken. He would do everything to defend Alexei Navalny because he always defended all political prisoners and he participated in one-man protests in support for political prisoners all the time. I think that he would have been really inspired with what I saw last Saturday, very much inspired.
Knowing your dad, I think he would be inspired. I know he was tough and he was open and democratic. And I think he would be very proud of Zhanna Nemtsov today. So
so probably I will have a chance to ask him one day, though I'm not a religious person.
Are you going to, last question, I know you've done journalism. Are you going to go into
I'm still a journalist. What?
Are you going to go into politics in Russia?
No. So I founded the Boris Nemtsov Foundation for Freedom in Germany. It's registered in Germany. And now I am focused on the development of the Boris Nemtsov Foundation for Freedom. And I find this job really interesting. And I think we don't have a lot of impact because we are a small organization, but we have some impact. And I want to grow this organization to make it really impactful. We have very few organizations such as the Boris Nemtsov Foundation. It's a policy organization, yes. We are focused on education, on journalism, things like that. I am a journalist. Till 2020, I worked for Deutsche Welle, the German public broadcaster. I interviewed the world leaders in many countries of the world. Now, I'm a freelance journalist, and I'm working on my own projects. Basically, all these projects are in English, so I want to switch to English language journalism. Wish me luck.
Good luck. And it was a privilege knowing your dad, and it's wonderful meeting you. And thank you so much, Zhanna.
Thank you very much. Have a nice day.
Good luck to you. All right, Mikhail Kasyanov joins me now from just outside of Moscow. He is a Russian politician who served as the prime minister from 2000 to 2004, and I've interviewed him many times and respect his opinion very deeply on what's happening inside Russia. Mikhail, some stunning events on the weekend when you take a look at the, not just the numbers of people, but when you take a look at the landscape of protests, I mean, close to 100 of them right across the country.
Yes. Landscape, geography, as like we say, geography is amazing. It's never happened before in Russia in the last 20 years. In fact, it's more than 100 cities in all Russia just on the streets of 100, more than 100 cities, people appeared to protest against what going on in Russia, in the country, and protest against arrest of Alexei Navalny.
What got them out there? Is it just Navalny's arrest, or is there more to it?
A little deeper. In fact, people are already tired of discontent by the authorities already has been accumulated, and I would say lawless behavior of authorities on many, many respects. I would say an ability of authorities to establish some kind of channel for communication with the society, and I would say arrogant behavior, etc., etc. But the trigger of this was arrest of Alexei Navalny, who after poisoning came back to Moscow and was arrested at the airport. People were shocked by that. And plus on that of the recent movie, I would say video, which was placed in the internet by Alexei Navalny about Putin's, about the corruption around him, and him, of course, just added to this to this respect as well too.
I sat through that entire video, and I thought it was remarkable because it's very detailed on the corruption of Putin, people around him, hundreds of millions of dollars taken, this palace near the Black Sea. You know, Putin shrugged it off this week and kind of smirked and, as you said, arrogantly responded, you know, maybe one day he'd like to have a winery, but the Kremlin has just said all of this is false and fiction. Is it fiction or is it real?
Yeah, all people, of course, believe it's real. It's not necessarily to be registered as ownership, but in fact, just two main factors that the sky was locked around that, and but for aircrafts and helicopters,
and no fly zone by the FSB, the Federal Security Service.
It was done officially by Ministry of Transportation because of their authority. But of course, under the security, and the whole area is under security of FSB or Secret Service, which protects Putin and people, high-level people around here. That's why people, of course, have no doubts about it.
And are people outraged? I mean, you know, people are struggling during the pandemic. The economy's not good. There's stagnation in Russia. I think that when they take a look at this monstrous palace that, you know, looks like another Versailles, they must be furious.
It is not a real, I would say, or major aspect, as I said. That was like a trigger or just addition to all I would say, discontent, and people are unacceptable behavior of authorities, etc. But, you know, just corruption in Russia has always was a problem. And a majority generations, they lived during the corruption or during Soviet period.
Sure. Time. Yeah, I mean, it's one thing if you have corruption by bandits. It's another thing if your leader is seen to be stealing billions of dollars from people, though. Right. That's very different.
For young people, for new generation, who don't have this in their memories, of course, for them, it's like explosion. For teenagers and on a TikTok, different movies and different placement there, of course, just very much created the whole atmosphere around it. But as I say, that's not the main issue for majority of those people who were in the streets last Saturday. Mainly, that is, I would say, the discontent is maturing in their mind. And that's what I would like to say, just the main issue for this 2021 is just constitutional event, elections to State Duma. And that could be, I would say, the critical point for the whole historical, I would say, period of Russia at this moment. And this,
what you're saying is that you have parliamentary elections, the Duma, and they're coming up in September. And what's at stake here?
Yeah, that is the point when people started to understand that their constitutional rights, their votes are stolen, or authorities don't allow at all, or in principle don't allow people to express their position. To express their opinion. They don't allow opposition parties to participate. They don't allow opposition candidates to participate in elections. Or even for those few which they allow to come in, they just then falsify the results. That's what it happened in December 2011 and could happen 2029.
You ran for president. So you know, you were
11, then. It was parliamentary elections. When it wasn't present, they cut me from elections when my support started to grow. They, on the early stage, 1 month after registration, they cut me because just they understood that could be a danger. But I mean, in December 2010, 2011, there was results, there was parliamentary elections. And then, at that time, I would say 100,000 people in Moscow appeared in the streets to protest. And at that time, authorities, Putin, started to somehow to relax the situation. He made a decision to ease registration of political parties and some other minor things. But then when demonstrations disappeared from Moscow streets, they stopped all those changes and even squeezed the whole environment even furthermore.
Very quickly, what do you think of Navalny? You know him. You've met with him many times. You were in a coalition with him, were you not, at one point?
Yeah.
What's your take on him? I mean, he bravely came back. I don't think a lot of people would.
He's a brave person. That's no doubt about that. Even for many, many people who doubt about his, strengths or political position, because sometimes people criticize him for him. For extreme rights expressions or extreme left expressions, etc., etc. But he's really a real leader of the protests. on the street protests. He is the leader of this, and he is leader of youth. That's definitely, there is no any other of such, I would say, with such a popularity. And he is a very brave person. And because of his coming back, many people who didn't support him right now changed their attitude to Mr. Navalny.
That's when absolutely- I look at that video, and we come back to that video for a moment. I mean, he called Putin a bandit, a thief. He listed all of the people with their pictures, with their names, the so-called wallets, the people who store the administration, not the administration, store the president's money illegally in the shadows. That seems like an act of...
As I say, at this moment, there is no doubt that Alexei Navalny right now, the brightest representative of the opposition. And no one is, I would say, have doubts about that. No,
is he ever going to get out of prison?
I mean the prison?
Is he ever going to be allowed out of prison after doing... that video criticizing Putin.
And that's interesting story. Right now, there is a discussion about that. In fact, I will tell you on this stage that behavior of Putin and his authority with respect to Navalny's, I would say, freedom depends on the position of leaders of European Union. For Russia, for Putin, position of European Union, it's very important. Russian economy in a very poor position at this moment. And at least not worsening relations, economic relations in particular with European Union, that's an important issue for Mr. Putin. And that's why he, I feel he wants, and his people around, they want Navalny to put to jail for a long time. But the situation could change. They could somehow to reconsider their emotional attitude to this movie and somehow just to get a little bit back to the reality and to even legal justice and to release him from this, I would say, convention what were just artificially created for the on this stage. And but in any case, he would not be released completely, but it could be he could be put in arrest at home, but not in jail.
So you're saying the EU, which is wobbly and wavering on Russia and sanctions, and they met this week and they kind of came out with no decision, which is pretty common for the EU, but they are going to come to Russia. You urge them to take those sanctions. Otherwise, if they don't keep the pressure on, Navalny may spend a long time in prison.
I have to express just the whole, I would say, attitude to what's happened around Navalny. First of all, the issue number one, that is application of Novichok, of nerve agent Novichok. That is prohibited. And as I understand from all those reports, that there is no doubt of organization of prohibition of chemical weapons, that it was Novichok and was application of this.
And
it
Russia is a
violation of international law.
Chemical weapons convention,
Yeah, that is violation of international law. That's the issue number one, which could be considered. And secondly, of course, more internal issue like Navalny and his arrest. That is human rights abuse, etc. But the primary issue, of course, Novichok.
Mikhail Kasyanov, always an honor to talk to you. Good to see you.
Great pleasure. Thank you very much.
Alex Kokcherov is a political risk analyst, and he knows Russia well, Belarus, and other parts of Eastern Europe. Hi, Alex.
Hello.
Pretty remarkable scenes we've seen in Moscow and right across the country, all the way out to Vladivostok.
Yes, it was quite sizable turnout in more than 100 cities across the country, from Vladivostok and Yakutsk in eastern Russia. In Yakutsk, people turned up to protest despite minus 52 degrees Celsius, all the way to the western cities of Kaliningrad, Sochi, and St. Petersburg. So quite significant turnout.
What do these demonstrations represent? Is this just about the jailing of Navalny, or is it more?
It is a combination of factors, and arrest of Navalny was one of those factors. Another factor was release of a film by Navalny's team about alleged corruption in the Russian administration and alleged unexplained wealth enjoyed by...
Alex, have you seen the video?
Yes, I've seen the video.
I don't think most people... I think we have to talk about it for a minute, because just saying there's a film out there is not enough. First of all, it is almost 2 hours. It is very detailed by Alexei Navalny and his team going through Putin's accumulation of extreme wealth over 20 years. And he names names. He does flow charts on, he calls them his wallets. He shows this palace that he has built near the Black Sea that supposedly could be $1 billion by their numbers, interior pictures, orders for furniture. And I mean, he really directly goes after President Putin, saying that he's a thief and he's surrounded by thieves and he's stolen from the country and people have to go to the street and fight this so that the thievery ends. It's very powerful.
It is. And it's a very, you know, a very interesting film, and dozens of millions of people worldwide, not only in Russia, have watched it. It is obviously the blockbuster of Russia in 2021. It's been watched by nearly 100 million people, which is remarkable when you think about it.
Is he ever going to get out of jail? I mean, I think that Putin and the Kremlin, knowing them the way I do, and I was in the country for 12 years, Putin cannot take this not personally. And I think they're going to throw away the key.
I think it is increasingly likely that Navalny will remain in prison for an extended period of time. The fact that he was reportedly target of an assassination back in August last year, when he was poisoned, again, reportedly with a Novichok chemical agent back in Siberia, suggests that, there are some strong decisions which are made by very senior people in Russia regarding Navalny.
Well, he says Putin would have had to sign off. This is nobody else would have allowed a political assassination to take place.
Pretty much so, yes. And it does sound credible that an order of political assassination of this magnitude would come from very high up in the Russian leadership.
If you're good at managing risk and assessing risk in Russia, is this just another attack, or do you consider it a new chapter? Because we've had journalist Annette Polakovskaya that was shot at her apartment before because of her reporting on Chechnya. Boris Nemtsov, an opposition figure, killed literally right in front of the Kremlin. But Navalny is a very high-profile opposition figure. For them to take him out now, for what reason? Why?
Honestly, we don't know why, if there was an assassination order, we don't know why the timing was in August 2020. The fact that Navalny survived it and recovered and decided to come back to Russia obviously sends a strong signal to the Kremlin that he intends to fight and he intends to continue his opposition to the Kremlin and to Putin. And it only sends signals to the Kremlin that in order to mitigate Navalny and other opposition figures, the Kremlin must do something. And I think it looks increasingly likely that he will stay in prison for an extended period of time. And the fact that, I think the fact that there were these large protests, it only adds to this, because if now Navalny is set free, it would suggest that the protests work and that the Kremlin can be pressured into releasing arrested political opponents by large-scale turnouts during protests.
Do you think that the Kremlin and Putin are caught in a corner? I mean, they said that they would arrest Navalny if he came back, probably hoping that he wouldn't come back.
Yep.
He came back, he forced their hand, and now they're stuck because if they let him out, they look too soft, and that's not a good thing in Russia. If they keep him in, it's going to keep firing the street and protests.
Yes, but I think the calculation is very similar with calculations which were happening back in 2003 with businessman Mikhail Khodorkovsky. There have been threats of his arrest, which he ignored, and he came back to Russia. And despite the fact that he was given multiple warnings that there will be prosecution against him unless he stops pursuing political goals and leaves the country altogether, he would face an arrest. He disobeyed. He decided to continue with his political agenda, and he was arrested, and he spent more than 10 years in prison. And I think it's increasingly likely, I see these parallels with Khodorkovsky, and I think it's increasingly likely that the Kremlin will keep Navalny in prison for an extended period of time, despite the fact that it is likely to be a trigger to protests.
Because how do you read Navalny? I mean,
from the Kremlin's perspective, the protests are not life-threatening.
Not yet.
They were not yet. They were quite significant, quite large. But, you know, in Moscow, there are different estimates between 20 and 40, maybe 50,000 people turned up. Yeah. For a city of 15 million people, even 50,000 is not significant for a protest. So from Kremlin's perspective, Navalny doesn't command the streets. So he cannot mobilize enough people to create genuine threats to the Kremlin.
But he's a popular figure, and they've just made him very popular now. I mean, they've made him, some people have even used the word Mandela. I don't think he's a Mandela figure yet, but he's certainly, in Russia terms, he's not a Khodorkovsky who was a rich oligarch who ran oil companies and was arrested off his private jet. I mean, Navalny is a pretty common guy. He's a lawyer, and, you know, he's not living beyond his means. And suddenly a lot of Russians will identify with him and support him. I mean, you've got videos on TikTok where school kids are taking down portraits of Putin and putting up portraits of Navalny, and they have received millions of views.
Yes, Navalny is quite popular, but we have to remember that his popularity mostly lies with the urban middle classes in Moscow, St. Petersburg, and other larger cities across Russia. And he is still some way off from, you know, popularity amongst various social classes across the country, living, you know, across different types of localities.
Although you saw protests in 11 time zones. I mean, I don't want to overstate the demonstrations either, because I think they are still relatively small. But the width and the breadth of them across the country shows you that he has tapped into digital media. He has tapped into social media. And people now are not getting their news on Navalny from the main Kremlin television stations, who get their programming from the Kremlin. I mean, this guy has real support out there in social media with young people, with different age groups in the demonstrations. So you can't exactly put a limit on this and say it's going to end a certain way. We really don't know, do we? It's the beginning.
Yes, and I'm not going to dispute this. The fact that these protests took place across the entire country in very diverse cities, and there were, you know, a lot of protesters who actually turned up for the first time to protest, which I think is quite important. But from the Kremlin's perspective, it's still not enough to generate genuine threat to the continued rule of the ruling elites of Putin and his administration.
I think your read is right, and I think the Kremlin will dig in here, and they're not going to give any ground, which leads to more confrontation and more demonstrations. In the meantime, last question to you, because you deal with risk and you deal with corporate risk as well. A lot of people, I mean, foreign companies, a lot of them left Russia anyway with the first rounds of sanctions. But do you think that there will be more sanctions? Because there is certainly a call for that.
Well, we've seen these calls for more sanctions by the European Union, specifically in response to to Navalny's arrest and to the use of heavy force against protesters. Mm-hmm. But also, we have to remember that there are calls for new sanctions in the US, and they stem from other things, which also include allegations of cyber attacks by reportedly Russian actors against US government and US private sector firms. These cyber attacks were very much large scale, and there have been statements from at that time it was still team of President-elect Biden, now President Biden, that there will be consequences and that there will be sanctions coming in response to these incidents. So I think we're likely to see more threats of sanctions and potentially more sanctions. The big question is what the sanctions will be. From the European Union, I think personal sanctions against individuals in the Kremlin administration are more likely rather than economic sanctions. There are a lot of business interests in the European Union which still favor doing business in Russia. We know that Russia still supplies a lot of gas and oil to the European Union, and there are infrastructure projects in place, despite the fact that they're subject to US sanctions. So I think it's going to be a very mixed picture. The European Union sanctions are less likely to be economic and more personal targeted sanctions against specific individuals.
Let's end where we started. When you saw those images on the weekend, and how many different cities they were in, and watched them unfold through the day, what was your reaction? What did you think?
It was impressive. I expected that there will be protests on that day, but I didn't expect that they will be, you know, across entire country, across so many cities, over 100 cities across Russia, and there will be such a big turnout. And also, I got the impression that the protesters this time around appeared to be somewhat more assertive in their actions and less frightened of the police. And this could mean there can be potential change in the way these protests take place in the coming weeks.
Good point.
There will be another protest on 31st of January.
It's a good point, because I was watching in Moscow where they were fighting back with police, St. Petersburg, where they were pelting them, showering them, burying them with snowballs,
yep.
And fighting and pushing. And it's got the potential to kind of spin into a more violent showdown as these continue. Alex Kovcharov, thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Thanks a lot. Have a good evening.
And that's our second backstory on Russia unrest. So much to play for in that country. Putin is getting old, and it feels like he's been the president forever. 20 years is forever. Polls show most Russians want change. And the question is, will there be a peaceful transition or just more repression and stagnation in that great country? I'm Dana Lewis. Please subscribe to the podcast, and I'll talk to you again soon.